Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today we have John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle in part two of our conversation, but first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Now let's get to part two of our conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, John, on Wednesday, I picked up my Sporting Green, and your colleague, Bruce Jenkins, wrote a very important story, the headline, Not Sugarcoating. So you don't even have to know that it's about Brian Sabian to know that it is Brian Sabian when you see that headline, because he doesn't sugarcoat. And he had that quote in there that they definitely needed to get more athletic, younger, improve their defense, which has been atrocious. Which he's not saying anything that we don't know, but to hear that from an executive, you know, the lead executive with the Giants, it does say something about how changes need to be made. So do you think that after hearing that and kind of knowing that all along that there has been frustration, that there are going to be big changes next year? Because we didn't see big changes made this year at the trade deadline or anything like that.
No, we did not. We did not at all. But Brian Sabian, like you said, never sugarcoats anything. And that's been the case since he came aboard under this new ownership in the early 90s. When he became the assistant for Bob Quinn, he spoke his mind. And especially in some down years, whether it's 94, 95, these are some down seasons, you know, all the way up to 07, 08. There were some seasons that the Giants just did not compete, not contend, but just did not compete. And you talk to him in August and September at the end of these runs. Yeah, I mean, he's more honest than most. He's not afraid to say what's on his mind. And sometimes he's kind of aired out his feelings in seasons that where the Giants were actually contending, but in a slump. And I can't prove this with numbers or anything, but just as memory serves, the Giants kind of had some spikes after he popped off about lack of this, lack of that. Now, it doesn't matter this year. They're so far out of it that it doesn't matter how they finish because it won't be good. But you mentioned that quote. I mean, some of the others, it's just, you know, whatever culture we created, whatever atmosphere, that window is closed. So it's something that, you know, but it's not something you always hear from a high-ranking executive who does like to sugarcoat, or, you know, the manager, Bruce Bochy, has been honest, but, you know, I don't think he's ever been said the defense has been atrocious. You know, we all know by looking at it that it has been. You know, another line when he says, and this kind of goes back to your question about what they're going to do in the offseason, his line was, let's face it, how many free agents are going to come here? They're not, for two reasons. The ballpark and the California taxes. That's just a fact. So, some good stories have come out lately about how Steph Curry is the highest paid NBA player, but not really, because he pays a lot more taxes than they do in Cleveland or Houston or some of these other NBA locales. So he's right about that. You don't see the top-notch hitters in free agency come here because it's so tough to hit a home run. And, you know, you'll see some people even blow it off because of tax reasons. So what does that say? Well, maybe it says that the Giants won't be heavy into free agent hitters. I mean, who have they signed, really, from the outside, beyond Denard Span, beyond who they've already had? Yeah, they brought back Pence. You know, they brought back Scudero. They brought back some of these guys who helped them win over the years. But Span was one of the few guys they actually took off the free agent market who was a hitter. They brought plenty of pitchers in here, and pitchers enjoy being here because it's a pitcher-friendly park. So that means you might see the trade route, based on that comment, a lot more prevalent than the free agent route for the Giants this offseason.
More with John Shea in just a moment. The next time you're on your way to a Giants game, stop by Town's End Restaurant and Bakery for breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., or for brunch on the weekend from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Celebrating their 26th year, family-run and cozy, Town's End Restaurant and Bakery captures the spirit of San Francisco with homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. They're serving cage-free Petaluma eggs and have been organic since well before organic became mainstream. Consistent quality, 4-star Google reviews, and great service from loyal employees that have been there for over 20 years. Town's End Restaurant and Bakery, a Buster Posey home run away from AT&T Park, right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco. Well, one thing we know is that the Giants are showing interest in Shohei Ohtani from Japan, and we've all heard about him being the Babe Ruth of Japan because he can pitch and throw close to, I think, 100 miles an hour, and he can hit home runs, and he's basically a do-it-all player. And the first thought you have is that no way did the Giants get him, because other bigger market teams, you know, the Dodgers, the Yankees, they'll be able to spend and get him, but there are some complications there. And in fact, I mean, he could have made a lot more money if he stayed in Japan for another couple of years based on all of those complications. But do you think the Giants have a realistic chance of getting involved because of the fact that, you know, there are some limitations here as far as how much a team can spend with the international signing and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I think that Ohtani might be the first superstar in history who, when he says it's not about the money, is actually believable. Because
right.
he could have waited 2 more years when he was older than 25 and when he had more service time in Japan and come here as an unrestricted free agent and gotten $100 million-plus, well north of that, as a two-way batter-slash-pitcher. Now, because he wants to come now and he's not 25, well, the collective bargaining agreement now has international cap limits and bonuses that cannot go beyond certain amounts. The Giants, for instance, how much can they pay on this wonderful player? Well, $300,000 is all they can pay for him. Now, every team would have to put in for the $20 million posting fee. No longer is it an auction where it'll go to the highest bidder. It's now a flat fee of $20 million. So I imagine every team, they'd be silly not to. All 30 teams would say, yeah, put us in on the list. We'll pay that $20 million posting fee to the team, you know, for the rights to negotiate with Ohtani. So once that's paid, now suddenly you look around, there's a lot of teams are in this position. Maybe a third of the teams in baseball have a cap of about $300,000. Why are the Giants limited to $300,000? Well, it's because a couple of years ago they spent $6 million on Lucius Fox, the kid they sent with Duffy to Tampa Bay in the Matt Moore trade. So even though they dealt him, they're still on the hook with this cap, and the most they can spend on him is $300,000. It's not like any team can blow him away with $10 million or $20 million. I believe the Rangers have the most cap space for Ohtani, and that's about $5 or $6 million. So would you want to go there because it's the most money, or would you want to go to a team like the Giants because it's a better fit, or the Yankees or Boston or the Dodgers, whatever? And so that's why I say it's not about the money, because he could have waited 2 years and got all the money in the world. and now he's going to have to come in and get these smaller paydays. So he basically can pick his market, pick his team based on where he wants to go, not as much as who has the most to offer. I mean, yeah, obviously $5-6 million by the Rangers is a lot more than the Giants or other teams can offer $300,000. But Ohtani, I think, has enough interest on the side in Japan that he's probably doing pretty well financially. So I think it's more a matter of, and by the way, he can get the bigger payday. He's so young down the road. But, you know, the realistic guess here is that he's going to go to the American League. He throws right-handed and he bats left-handed. He's a great pitcher and he's a great hitter. He's the Babe Ruth of Japan. You keep hearing that.
Right.
The Giants would, you know, they're interested, and proof is that Bobby Evans, the general manager, and the assistant GM, Jeremy Shelley, are in Japan right now. So it's not like they're just sending a scout or two. They're sending a couple of their top guys to express interest, to make sure they're seen, to watch, to see how good this guy is. As a Giant, what would he do? Well, he'd be in the rotation and maybe left field, but maybe not left field every day. In the American League, he'd be in a rotation, and maybe he DHs every day. See, that's the difference.
Right.
It's kind of tough to get your reps as a defensive player and start every fifth day. It worked for Babe Ruth for a while, but he wasn't always that two-way player. He gave up pitching to become, you know, one of the greatest hitters ever. So it's just not done. It's just too hard to do both. It's hard to do one. But this guy could make some serious history, and the Giants would love to have him, especially at that price. But it's all on him. Wherever he wants to go, he'll go.
Well, the Giants had the first Japanese player, right? So he could look at history there and say, okay, maybe I'll follow along with that. He could look at the ballpark and say, when I'm a pitcher, this is a pretty good place to pitch. So maybe that helps him. Maybe, you know, it sounds like a popularity contest to me as to, you know, like you said, the money all being sort of equal, you know, even though the Giants are behind a little bit there. It's more of a popularity contest. You really have to sell everything about your team and your ballpark.
You're right. And you know, they might have charts. They might have pictures. They might have diagrams. They might have all these spreadsheets that would suggest the Giants are headed in the right direction. I'd like to see them if they're out there. but look, Seattle would say, hey, we've had wonderful Japanese players here. It would be a perfect fit. They fit in well. We fit in well with them. It's a great community. But you could say the same thing with the Yankees. So you know, every team will have a pitch, and then you could, the Dodgers will say, hey, listen, we have the best record in the weather. You know, Chicago would say, you know, the curse is over. You know, there's no greater place to play than Chicago, the Cubs. So it's, you know, every team will have a pitch, and his agent is going to be pretty busy. And we don't know a whole lot about him, whether, you know, who's going to represent him, how he's going to do this. He doesn't have to have one of those showcases. I mean, he's being showcased every day in Japan right now. He's had some injuries this year, but he had a terrific year last year, but he's playing again now, and that's what the Giants are looking at. So it's, you know, the Giants are not alone. You know, every team would love to have him, but it's a really intriguing story because, you know, he turned down the opportunity to make a lot more money by sticking in Japan a couple more years to get out of that contract and to come to the States in 2018.
This could come full circle because there was Masanori Murakami. He was the first Japanese player in the U.S., but then, you know, of course, there was Nomo and Ichiro and Hideki Matsui and the Yankees. So Yankees, Dodgers, Mariners, this could come back to the Giants, you know, for making headlines
in
that regard.
Who had the first Japanese-born World Series player?
Would that be the Giants in
02? Shinjo, baby.
Right,
yeah.
Shinjo in 02. Man, he was a character.
Yeah.
So maybe Ohtani's like that. And by the way, so if Ohtani ends up with the Giants, he may have a different manager because, I don't know, is Bruce Bochy going to continue? It looks like he is. I mean, after the story that you did with Henry Shulman in the Chronicle, John, I mean, all appearances are that Bochy wants to continue on because some people did wonder if he might just hang him up after a year like this, but he doesn't want to end on this note. So what sense did you get about his motivation, you know, as far as continuing for several years you know, what kind of energy he has left?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, the Giants have won a few games in a row now, but April, May, June, July, it's a long season. And more than a couple of people I've spoken with who are real close to him, whether they're old teammates you know, just friends or longtime acquaintances, you know, they ask me, say, why is he doing this? You know, he doesn't need this. He's going to the Hall of Fame. That's no doubt. He's got all the money he probably needs. You know, he's got 3 world championship rings, right? He's 62 years old.
Right.
Bobby Cox managed to, you know, late 60s, Tony La Russa, those guys. But, yeah, you know, Bruce has had some heart-related issues in each of the 3 seasons. So I figured that's a fair question because on the eve of this season, I asked Bruce, you know, pretty much how long he expected to manage. And he said, well, I'm going to manage as long as I think we can win. So they were coming off a playoff spot when I spoke to him on the eve of the season, you know, as a wild card, and they lost, they won the wild card game. And of course the meltdown against the Cubs. And, you know, he thought that with Melanson and, you know, give it another run here. Well, so I asked him again, because this team really plays, you know, all year like it did in the second half last year. Not well. Injuries, a lot of hitters and pitchers not living up to their norm. And so I asked him again, and then because I just heard so many people, is he coming back? Is he coming? He's got 2 more years on his contract. But so I kind of confirmed, yeah, I'm coming back. As he said, and this is a pretty good comment, he said, you know, a lot of guys want to retire because they want to do the things they enjoy. And Bochy tells me, you know, the thing I enjoy the most is managing. So if I retired, I would want to manage. And it kind of said a lot. I said, okay, that makes sense. I mean, you've got 2 more years. You want to manage, manage. And then about the heart issues, he said, listen, you know, a lot of people in sports are going through what I'm going through. And that's true. You know, Francona, Dusty Baker, Popovich in the NBA, you know, a few others. And, you know, he said, look at how many games I missed. And, you know, it's been 3. You know, it happened in spring training 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it was just 1 game. This year was just 2 games. So he's missed 3 games in 3 years because of that. So he said, you know, a lot of other guys have missed a lot more games just with graduations, you know, so I'm fine.
Right.
So, you know, those 2 comments pretty much put it in perspective, say, okay, he's going to come back. He wants to come back. He's healthy. He's feeling good. And he said, absolutely, he thinks this team can contend again next year. And that's the third point. You know, he doesn't want to oversee a rebuild. So now you have, you know, everything in place in his mind, based on what they do in the offseason, to give this another whirl next year with the core guys. And obviously health is going to have to be a factor, and players are going to have to come back to the norm of the track record that shows if they're a .280 hitter, they can't be hitting .220. You know, if they have a 3.2 ERA, they can't have a 6 ERA. So, you know, it's up to the players to perform, but Bochy is all in.
One thing that we haven't seen during the World Series era is any kind of fractured clubhouse, and you wonder about that. I mean, you go back to the Ken Rosenthal story with Mark Melanson and the stretching, and that seemed like silliness, but definitely the story that you did with Henry drew some national attention because there were a couple of players that remained anonymous, but they did have something to say about Bruce Bochy and sort of a negative approach, you know, criticizing some of the players maybe a little too much, especially in a year like this. I mean, at least they felt like, you know, one of them said something about how it seems like nothing they do is good enough. you can understand from Boch's perspective that, yeah, you'd be frustrated when the way when the season's going the way it is. But you know, do you think that there are some other players that just aren't saying anything, that are, you know, a little upset with the other side of it, the way they're being handled by the manager, and does he need to make an adjustment?
Well, here's what Bochy told me on that. But Bochy told me that, you know, this year, a lot more than in seasons in which they win, he's held closed-door meetings. And that includes with the front office guys, his coaching staff, and players. And he even said, you know, in a lot of these cases, I got to be honest, it wasn't pretty. In other words, it ain't working here. We got to turn this around. And basically, he wanted to tell these guys that we got to shake it up a little bit. We got to move on. We got to get better. And in some cases, hey, if you're not doing it, I got to go find someone else who could. So, you know, the culture with a team heading for 100 losses is not the same for a team heading to the postseason, obviously. So, you know, it wasn't difficult to hear the vibe. And we've pretty much seen it all year that it hasn't nearly been as lively, and that's because they just haven't won as much. So, you know, the more you ask, the more you hear. And, you know, in a lot of cases, when we went around the room to ask players for comments on Bochy, you know, it's like anything else. You're not going to get, you know, 100% glowing feedback right. about a guy or about a situation or about the culture or the vibe or the, you know, standings or the winning percentage or any of that. So it was, you know, somewhat predictable. And, you know, people aren't happy with their production. People are not happy with the direction of the team. People are not happy in some cases, probably with you know, playing or not playing or where they're being used. And that's human nature, especially on a losing team. So, and I've covered plenty of them. You know, going back to San Diego and then coming up here, 92 was one of the worst, 94, 95, 07, 08. You know, a lot of teams going nowhere fast. And, you know, there was some discontent pretty much on every one of those teams. So, you know, it wasn't surprising, but, you know, I spoke with Bochy afterward. He says, well, I don't want a happy culture. I don't want these guys being satisfied. So I think that's the bottom line. And, you know, you turn the page on that and move on and then try to do it again next year. But I think the point isn't that, you know, players are saying this or players are saying that. I think the point is the fact that, you know, everybody in the room wants it to get better. And, you know, that includes the coaching staff and the front office officials, and that's where we are right now. You know, how's it going to get better? And who's going to get it done? You know, which trade, which free agent signing, which release, which contract is going to get bought out? And that's what we have to look forward to in the coming months.
Well, I really like his quote to you when he said that, you know, he hopes that they have a healthy tension because they do need a kick in the butt. There's no doubt. And this last week of the season, it's all about John Shea because we're going to have our last podcast talking about 2018. We're going to look ahead to 2018 when we talk again, John. So appreciate the time today. And, you know, it's going to be fun to kind of look ahead and see what we think the Giants will look like next season.
Yeah, we'll see if we're both here next season, that for starters. But yeah, it'll be a whole different roster, in a lot of ways. A lot of contracts will still be around, but I think you're going to see some new blood that maybe none of us expected in 2018.
This roster on Inside China Basin was really good. So, thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, and we'll talk to John again on Thursday for a two-part conversation to finish up the 2017 season. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.